Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hello there. Welcome into your Friday morning. Happy you're with us here. It is the, third day of January of 2025, and seems weird to have a day off in the middle of the week, but here we are. It is Friday. We're headed into the weekend. We know there is some weather developing because it's, after all, winter. But we're going to check in with the expert on that, and that would be meteorologist Dave Murray. He's going to join me in the next hour just to talk more about what he's expecting. The local news channels are, reporting anywhere from a foot to a couple of inches, depending on where you are. You know, here's the weird thing about this, Kim. I don't know how you feel about this, and I've talked to my meteorology friends about it before. I watched a report yesterday from Scott over at Channel 5 that they had posted up online. And at the point he had recorded that, he said that the weather system they were looking at had not even made landfall in the United States yet, as of yesterday. So they're able to track these things and speculate on where it'll be and how much moisture will be here when we're in this deep freeze starting Saturday night at midnight. And to project from there, I did just the technology of it amazes me. So we'll talk to Dave Murray about where the thing is now and what he's thinking for snowfall totals. And, you know, if you live in Troy, you're clearly going to get a different outcome than if you live in Bon Terre.
This is when I'm really hoping the meteorologists are wrong.
It'd be nice. I told you famously down there behind the set in the old building at Channel 4, they had an invoice tacked up on the wall behind the weather set. Kent Earhart put it there years ago because he had gone on the air and he had forecast, I don't know, 6 inches of snow, 7 inches of snow. And then we didn't get a drop. And some guy who runs his own local company with salt and, you know, scraping and all that sent Kent an invoice for all of the salt and supplies he had ordered based on that forecast. Oh. And I don't know how much it was, several thousand dollars, if I remember correctly. And obviously it wasn't anything the TV station intended to pay, but they kept that tacked up there as a reminder that what you say is important.
It matters.
Right? It matters if you're the one making these forecasts, because people are depending on you to be right. For sure. All right, we'll get to David about 8:35 this morning. Set your clock for that. At 7:35, we're going to talk to Congressman Eric Burleson. So there are a handful of people out there very upset with Mike Johnson on the CR. They weren't happy about how that whole thing was handled. How are they going to vote today? We know there's at least one no, and we're going to talk more about that right now in our top stories. Let's get to it, Ethan, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Speaker Johnson, why are there still undecideds before this election? One day before the election, why are there still undecideds?
People are talking through process changes they want and those kinds of things, and I'm open to that, and I think tomorrow's going to go well.
What's your message to the undecideds, Mr. Speaker?
All right. That's obviously Speaker Mike Johnson expecting nothing but positive things when there's a vote a little later this morning.
I think outside of Massey, I think nobody else is a hard no. And so,
yeah, that's a representative named Carlos Jimenez. He's a Republican. He's like, you know, he's been doing lots of negotiating over the last 24 hours with people who are outstanding. The question might be, what about Thomas Massey?
You can pull all my fingernails out. You can shove bamboo up in them. You can start cutting off my fingers. I am not voting for Mike Johnson.
I would take that as a hard no. Anybody want to argue with me on that? I don't think Thomas Massey is voting for Mike Johnson today, no matter what he promises him.
First and foremost, let me be very clear about this point. This was an act of terrorism. It was premeditated and an evil act.
All right. So they sent the adults in down in New Orleans. And when the actual special agent in charge got on the scene, he cleared up any confusion about whether or not what happened down there was an act of terror. And how you feel about this? They now believe this guy was acting alone. And, you know, you hate to not want to take the FBI at its word, but their track record hasn't been great lately, and it kind of strains credulity, in my opinion, to believe that this is, there were pipe bombs set along the street and garbage cans and wherever they found them, near a church, some other stuff. So we have to believe then that, I haven't heard anybody say this, he must have gone in advance and put those things there before going and getting the truck and driving down Bourbon Street. You know, it's like the guy that left the pipe bomb outside of the DNC in Washington on January 6th. Whatever happened to that guy? Lots of questions that they haven't answered here yet. Kim St. Ange, I know that you have a toddler at home and one that demands a lot of your attention. Were you glued to the TV for the Sugar Bowl yesterday?
Absolutely.
Did you watch it?
No, I really didn't. I have been watching a lot of the games, and I've actually been enjoying it, but I didn't watch, although I did see that ESPN was getting slammed for not showing the national anthem or the moment of silence they had in honor of all the victims.
Yeah. On a separate channel, if you were watching the feed, you could have seen it. But most people were watching the main ESPN channel. And they had their talking heads yammering away, even while the stadium was being asked for a moment of silence in memory of the victims. And then the playing of the national anthem, and ESPN didn't show any of that. I mean, maybe not surprisingly, given the emotion and what had just happened, I'm really surprised that they were that dim-witted about it. Aren't you?
Yeah. You would think they would make sure that was priority number one, really.
Just have a little more presence of mind about the emotion that must have been there on the minds of not just the people that live in New Orleans, but let's face it, one reason New Orleans was so crowded on New Year's Eve is a lot of people arrived to make a weekend out of it. They were going to party on Bourbon Street and then go to the Sugar Bowl, which got delayed by a day. So all of those people had an emotional stake in what happened. And for ESPN to just be completely oblivious to that is amazing to me.
Yeah, I saw Tim Tebow was talking about it, and I thought that was good. But yeah, it is really sad when they don't realize that obviously is of utmost importance that they show that.
Well,
because that's what everyone's talking about right now in the country.
Well, I watched the winning quarterback. They interviewed him after the game for Notre Dame. I don't even know the kid's name, and his first answer to the first question was, "All glory goes to God." And in the middle of the interview, he said again, I just want to thank my Lord and Savior. And at the end of the interview, he said it again. So three times in this network interview, it must have been driving them crazy. He referred to Jesus as his Lord and Savior and said, everything we do comes through him. So I don't take any credit for my performance today, basically, is what he said. It was pretty awe-inspiring.
I think it was at the Arizona State coach who did the same thing, where twice I noticed when the sideline reporter interviewed him, he found a way to give the glory to Jesus. And I love that because you can't
times.
Escape it
huh?
when they keep putting it in the middle of whatever they're saying.
It was pretty awesome to watch. So, hey, coming up, we are going to get to Eric Burleson at the bottom of the hour. Before we get there, I get in arguments all the time with my fellow conservatives over whether or not we should have term limits. There are people who argue to me term limits are bad, that term limits in the state of Missouri that we have them are bad because you lose people who get into positions of power who can get things done, and then suddenly they're gone. There's somebody brand new that didn't have the experience or not. So I don't know how you feel about that, but there is a movement about to impose term limits again nationally. How do you feel about that? We're going to talk to one of the men who thinks that's a great idea, I believe. John Eichelberger is coming up. He used to be a Pennsylvania state senator, and we're going to get to him right after the break. Stay tuned. Well, I have long been a proponent of the idea of term limits, and in the absence of those, particularly at the federal level, I have been a fan of politicians who promised, I'll go to Washington, but I won't serve more than two terms or three terms or whatever the case may be in the case of a House member or a senator, if they've committed to that. Because I think it's healthy for what we do. When you end up with a situation like they had over here in the state of Illinois with Madigan, who was in office for 45 years, and, you know, absolute power absolutely corrupts. I believe that. And I think it that's as good a reason as any to argue for that. Personally, that's my take on it. We've got John Eichelberger on the phone. He's a former Pennsylvania state senator. He's also the Pennsylvania state co-chair of U.S. term limits. And Mr. Eichelberger, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me this morning.
Absolutely. So you have been a candidate for Congress, is that correct?
Yes, I was.
Was that part of your platform, to promise to not serve more than a certain number of terms?
Actually, it wasn't. I always had that belief. I served three terms in the state Senate. I served three terms as a county commissioner. My belief's been that you're in for, you know, a reasonable period of time and you get out. But I did sign a term limits pledge when I was in, I believe. I think I did, because I did believe in it. And I think I did sign the pledge at that time. So that would have been part of my platform one way or another.
What's your argument to, I know many people, many of them conservatives like me, who don't like the idea of term limits because they feel that just as you get somebody to, you know, 4 or 5 years into an office and they start to understand how to make things happen, suddenly they've termed out.
Well, you know, and that's because of the seniority system we have. I mean, there's this control that's concentrated on, you know, with a few members down there in the state or in Washington, and that's the way it works. We just had AOC last week complain about not getting a position on a committee that she felt she deserved and wanted, and it was given to a senior member, and that's the way things work. I mean, you can be the dumbest guy in the room, and you could be there one day more than everybody else, and now you're in charge of a powerful committee. And that doesn't make it right. I don't think it makes for a good structure, a good policy-making body, but that's the way most of the rules are, and that's the way it generally works. And those people have all the connections, all the influence, yes, all the money coming in from lobbyists. They have all that. And it's very hard to defeat these incumbents. Very hard. A significant portion of them every year don't even have any primary or general opposition in their elections.
How do we make this happen? I mean, you're obviously involved in this. You're watching what's going on around the country. There have been recently elected politicians who've said that they would vote for it in Congress.
Right. There's a lot of momentum right now. Polling has been around 82% for a long time, supportive of this across party lines. It's now up to 87%. I think it's because people have seen Joe Biden. They've seen Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein. There's others. Chuck Grassley, who I think is still pretty sharp, but he's like 90. There's a lot of people down there that have been there for a long time, and some of them aren't as sharp as they used to be and have physical problems and other things. So there's I think they see that aspect of it and they don't like it. They may not understand more deeply the power concentration and how that works within the legislative body. But we see Donald Trump coming out for it. Elon Musk came out for it last week. J.D. Vance was a pledge signer when he was in the U.S. Congress. Mike Johnson is supportive of it. We just had a new U.S. senator put in Ohio, and he was actually my counterpart in Ohio. He was the state chair there.
Bernie Moreno?
For Bernie Moreno, yes. Yeah. And we have a new U.S. senator in Pennsylvania, Dave McCormick, who beat Bob Casey, and he made term limits a significant part of his campaign. And you see across the country, when you look at polling numbers, people that support term limits when they were running have about a 2% advantage for that issue. So it is popular. So we have that. So there's a two-pronged approach. The federal level, we're trying to get it done. There was a voting committee in 2024, narrowly defeated, but now there might be more of an emphasis to get something going. But the states can do it. So we had three states pass resolutions this past year, which was the most we've ever had in a year. And so we see more momentum coming from state legislatures. And this year, there's going to be a real concentrated effort to get some other states on board. So we see some momentum growing here.
We'll keep an eye on it. John Eichelberger, is there a website people could go to find out more information?
Yes, thank you. It's ustermlimits.org. And you can get on there and learn about it, sign a petition, send in a check, do whatever you want to do, get involved as a volunteer. Lots of things that can happen. So, yeah, we appreciate that.
John,
thank you.
Thanks for your time.
You bet. Thanks all right. very much. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Take care. Good. Interesting. I mean, I've always thought it was a good idea. Reduces the concentration of power, for sure. All right, coming up, we're going to get to Congressman Eric Burleson. In his second term, to find out what he thinks about the speaker's race.
You can pull all my fingernails out. You can shove bamboo up in them. You can start cutting off my fingers. I am not voting for Mike Johnson tomorrow. And you can take that to the bank.
Yeah, well, that was Congressman Thomas Massey from the Commonwealth of Kentucky. He's been verbally the holdout that I know of on the speaker's race that is supposed to be voted on in just an hour or two here. And we have Congressman Eric Burleson on the phone right now. Congressman, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing fine, my friend. Great to get you on this morning. Thanks for giving me some time on what's bound to be a pretty busy day in the nation's capital, right?
Could be a very interesting day.
Well, you heard Thomas Massey there. I know you know the guy. You work with him up there. What's your take on this, and where do you stand on this speaker's vote?
You know, I love Thomas Massey, and I agree with him quite a bit. I've come to a conclusion, though, that with Trump coming in, that Johnson, whoever is going to be in that role, is going to do what the president wants for the next 2 years. And so things have already started to shift. Like when Johnson first came in, I was so disappointed because a lot of times he was making decisions based on what he thought the president could sign and what Chuck Schumer could sign. Now, and that made for a very, very frustrating experience. You know, we ended up passing, we spent more money than Pelosi did.
Wow.
We added more debt to the deficit than Pelosi. We did five continuing resolutions most of the time on each one of those. He had more, all the Democrats voting for it and a minority of Republicans. And that happened multiple times throughout the year. And so I'm frustrated with him, but I think I'm looking forward. And I think that regardless of who is elected speaker, they're going to be with such a slim majority, they're going to basically be doing what President Trump wants to see happen.
Okay. Do you have a feel for, I know there were other people that were very upset about the CR, Nancy Mace, Chip Roy, you were upset about the CR. Do you have any idea how some of the other folks are feeling about this? Because as I understand the math, he can only afford to lose, what, two votes?
Yes. And a lot of us have demanded some structural changes, some systematic changes in things like personnel and other things. The way in which we negotiate, for example, he has been only negotiating with his staff and with Chuck Schumer and the White House. He has to include members in negotiation. That's what Kevin McCarthy did. He used to have a team of members from different factions of the conference that would actually go into the negotiations. So you had member input and involvement. Then you could get buy-in. That has to happen with this, especially with such a slim majority. So we have demanded a lot of those structural changes, and I think Johnson he's made the commitments that things are going to be different in that regard.
It could take several rounds of votes, though, right, before he officially gets enough?
It could.
Do you see that happening?
I would say if it doesn't happen by the second round, I think the dam is going to break, and then people will quickly regroup. And I don't think that we will get past January 6th without a speaker. I think that we will probably, you know, if Johnson falters, I think Trump will step in and say, okay, I get it. Here's the next guy. I'm getting behind. And then we'll go from there. But okay. I just really don't think that people will move past January 6th.
I think, you know, your conclusion is a good one. Although I empathize with the position that you and Nancy Mace and others, Chip Roy, have taken on, like that CR, at this point, everything's at stake. If January 6th comes and goes and there's not a speaker, then you can't even certify the election. And I mean, the important thing is January 20th, right?
Yeah, the important thing is January 20th. But if we can get things, I think that we'll probably get things done by January 6th. And then what I hope that we do is start quickly moving on the first reconciliation bill. I would love it if we could have that on the president's desk the day that he's sworn in. A bill that includes language about, you know, fixing our southern border, language about unleashing Americans' energy, drill, baby, drill, you know, all of that stuff. Some early wins for Trump on his first day.
So let's just say that Mike Johnson gets through and is still speaker. What are the odds that in this case, Thomas Massie pulls what Matt Gaetz does a few weeks into this and basically calls a vote to try to oust him?
It would take more. So the discussions about changes in the rules have included reducing the number of the motion to vacate to 8 people. So it would require 8 people. It's sad. I think that has to come to that because I don't really support that change, but it's not the worst change that can be made to that. So I'm a former senator. I'm used to the process of having 5 members standing in order to do things. So you need to have at least 5 people that are willing to put their name on the line. Or in this case, it would be 8 people.
We got Congressman Eric Burleson on the phone with us this morning. Great to get him on here, of course, from the 7th Congressional District. And what time is that vote scheduled Eastern time today?
So it's noon Eastern time. It would be 11 o'clock your time.
Okay. So I'll be glued to the TV, I'm sure, to see what's going to happen. So, I'm anxious, Congressman. Have you had any contact with the incoming Trump administration? Have they given you any glimpse into what they're hoping to get accomplished quickly?
Oh, yes. I mean, I've been on the phone with J.D. Vance as late as last night and Trump's team about, I mean, they want to see this thing go smoothly. They want to see Johnson elected. They made that very clear. But they also understand that there's frustrations, and I think that they sense, and I think that they're starting to feel frustration with Johnson as well. But at the end of the day, that's the play that they're calling, and I've come to the conclusion that at the end of the day, it doesn't really probably matter who's going to be sitting in that chair as speaker. Mm. It's ultimately for the next 2 years going to be President Trump calling the shots.
Well, I mean, I hope so. I get the impression I get the impression from all this distance away that there's such an opportunity for momentum here, and you'd hate to see the wind get taken out of that right before he gets into office, because, again, you don't want to just be in a situation where you're having to do everything by executive order, because that clearly doesn't last. You have, 2 years before mm-hmm. these midterm elections, and you guys have got to put the rubber to the road, right?
Yeah, we do. And I think that, you know, the Republican Party has sucked for a long time. When we get the, you know, the majority and we get the gavel, we don't really do anything important. You see the Democrats score touchdowns like Obamacare. And then when we have a chance to repeal it, we fail. And I think that the American people, the Republican Party expects different. And I'm going to be demanding that we do the big, bold things and score some touchdowns.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. How would you judge that? I mean, obviously, being a member of the conservative caucus here when you were in the state senate, the freedom, what do they call it, the House Freedom Caucus? Is it strong? Is it growing? Do you feel like it's stronger than it's been in the past?
I've only been here for 2 years, so I couldn't really talk too much about the past, but I think that it's a strong group. It's some of the most talented members of Congress, probably some of the actually most talented members are members of Freedom Caucus. And so we're kind of the policy wonks, we're the nerds. The fact that we're having these meetings with Trump's team and the speaker, that whenever there's negotiations going on, the Freedom Caucus is in the room every time. That, I mean, it's a small group of people, but we're the ones that have quite a bit of leverage in steering the ship.
I saw Eric Schmidt playing golf with President Trump yesterday. How do you get one of those invites?
I don't know. I will say, though, I need to start playing golf. I've never been a golfer. I've never had time to play golf. I've always worked too hard, but yeah, that would be really fun to do that.
Tell Trump you'd like to learn. I could see him loving how to teach somebody how to play golf.
Oh yeah.
This is how you do it.
I'd be happy.
You stand right here like this. It's the best way ever to golf.
I'd be happy to carry the bag.
Yeah, that's
or drive
awesome.
The cart.
That is awesome. You know? Well, Congressman, listen, we appreciate your time this morning. We'll all be watching it today when the votes start taking place so we can get things rolling up there in D.C.
Awesome. Have a great weekend.
I sure will. Thank you very much. Congressman Eric Burleson from Missouri's 7th Congressional District. Bob Onder will be sworn in today when the House
and Wesley
gets
Bell.
Into session. So will Wesley Bell.
Yep. Not as excited about him, although I am excited that Cori Bush is no longer.
Yes. The scariest thing about Wesley Bell being sworn in today is that he's bound to be more effective than Cori Bush, right? She didn't get a single thing done the whole time she was there in 4 years. All she did was sleep on the steps and complain with the squad. She got nothing accomplished. Wesley Bell will go up there and actually vote on a few things. Now, obviously, the Democrats are in the minority, but
I'd like to think, though, that he has a better head on his shoulders, that he's a little bit more rational. She was the squeaky wheel. She was the one who got the media coverage because, like you said, she'd be screaming from the steps and doing outlandish things that got her a lot of coverage. But when push came to shove, she wasn't actually accomplishing anything, seems like.
And AOC learned the lesson that if you're too much of a squeaky wheel, when you decide you finally want to become part of the group and take over a chairmanship of something and as the minority chairperson, your own folks might vote against you. Like, she didn't get that job like she wanted because I think they were a little disappointed in her.
Let's predict. I know AOC is not quite 35, so she's not. I think she's younger than me. She's not quite old enough to be president. Will AOC, down the road, will she run for president?
Oh, no doubt about it.
I absolutely think she will.
She absolutely will.
I don't think it'll be in 4 years. I think you give her maybe 8 years, and I think you can expect to see her as a candidate.
And if not, it's back to bartending school. I mean, which one of the two options? What would you do? You'd run for president, wouldn't you?
That'd be a bartender.
I'm just saying.
It seems like a better option.
Yeah, exactly. What are we whimming about here in just a moment?
Well, we've heard about, what is it, the KJV version, the ESV, the NIV, the NLT version of the Bible, but now we have a DEI version of the Bible that has come out.
Oh,
we have to talk about
all
this.
All right, back in just a minute.
M on a whim.
Doesn't it just seem like DEI has made its way into just about every facet of our life?
Seriously,
can we escape it in anything that we're doing now? We were just talking about the Webster Grove School District and how they've hired a new superintendent, Jana Parker, and you were finding tweets that she had posted as recently as this summer and talking about white fragility and that we need to be anti-racist and we need to acknowledge basically the privilege we've had as white people every single day and renew that, right?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, I can
share some of this. But
yeah, share them.
Well, it was just no one becomes not racist despite the tendency by Americans to identify that way. We can only strive to be anti-racist on a daily basis and commit ourselves to the lifelong task of overcoming our country's racist heritage. This is the person they're bringing back to lead the Webster Groves School District. That's how woke this individual is. I mean, it has poisoned her mind. Is what it has.
I'm really hopeful with Trump in office. I understand that that won't necessarily impact something as small as a local school district, but I am really hoping that that will have a ripple effect and potentially impact school boards as a whole. But I saw this story that just makes me scratch my head. So there's this new study Bible called the Upside Down Kingdom Study Bible. And apparently it was written with diversity in mind, including theological diversity and gender diversity. What in the Bible? No, that just absolutely drives me bonkers. Listen to one of the contributors of this Upside Down Kingdom talking about this, that somehow some Christian publishing company agreed to put out.
One of the values going into the study Bible was diversity. So ethnic diversity, gender diversity, mm-hmm. denominational, theological diversity. Mm-hmm. Oh, there could be a unhealthy theological diversity in some settings, but I think we tried to foster healthy theological diversity.
I'm sorry, when did Jesus ever say that theological diversity was a good thing?
He was kind of teaching you his take on things, not a diverse take on things. That didn't mean he didn't encourage people to be kind to other people, but it wasn't theological diversity.
This guy says he likes the book of Luke because he says it elevates women. That's his reasoning. And he likes the book of John because he believes it deals with, quote, church trauma.
Okay.
I'm really hoping that we're going to see a change because I've been excited to see a lot of these bigger companies, including Lowe's. Was it Walmart? I mean, there are several companies that are starting to finally get rid of these DEI policies that they've been implementing for the last several years because they're realizing that they're not working. They've been the opposite of working. And I understand a company is very different than somebody putting out a study Bible, but this just really grinds my gears that they're now going to the Bible of all things and trying to change it and make it basically woke and politically correct.
So who's pushing this is what I would wonder. Is it the Church of Christ? I know they've got some pretty liberal denominations within that. I just wonder who. The Unitarian Church. I mean, who's pushing this version of the Bible?
I don't know that it's a particular group that's pushing it. This is just somebody who came up with this Bible. I'm sure some of these denominations might encourage people to read this part of the Bible. I wouldn't be surprised. In fact, when I was in Des Moines, Iowa, that was really before I became a Christian, but I was still going to church. And I remember going to one of these churches. A lot of the news people went there, and that was kind of how I found it. And it had a female pastor, and she was very much progressive. And, you know, I think it had the rainbow flag outside of
Unitarian
it.
Unitarian Universalist.
Basically. And yeah. It's just like that's what you see. I remember for Channel 4 covering one of the BLM things, and it was at a church in Kirkwood. And you see it a lot. I mean, you see it everywhere, but you see it in particular in the city and really parts of the county. Like I mentioned, Kirkwood, Webster Groves, those places have sadly become very liberal.
Yeah, I don't know how to wrap my brain around that, to be honest with you. It's not a matter. The social justice issue is one that I've always been fascinated by. Particularly when it comes to the issue of immigration, we've had this debate about the Catholic Church and social justice and, you know, harboring illegals and encouraging that. I have a hard time wrapping my brain around that. But reinterpreting the Bible through DEI takes it to a whole new level. It does. I don't know who these people are.
It's the ultimate slap in the face, is what it is.
It's like if this version of the Bible gets brought up at your church, it's probably time to find a new church.
Absolutely. I mean, talk about a red flag that you should have probably seen beforehand. But if this is what your pastor is pushing, this is a serious problem. And this is, I think, what we're going to continue to see as we move forward, especially with Trump in office. People are going to do everything they possibly can to counter him because they're so angry that he was reelected that they're going to say, I'll show you how I'm going to be X, Y, and Z. And in this case, DEI. I'll show you how we're going to be ethnically diverse and gender diverse, even when it comes to the Bible. Give me a break. I would really be curious to see what this study Bible says.
Yeah.
Is it going to say that Jesus was actually a, what are the different genders? He identified maybe as a they, them.
Yeah, but that's coming next. That's in chapter 12 or verse 12. I don't know. I just can't go there. Coming up next hour. Meteorologist Dave Murray, the man, the myth, the legend, is going to join us at 8:35 to give you an update on that incoming winter weather.
Get more at 971talk.com.